Reconciliation is everyone's business. When Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission issued its 94 calls to action, number 92 called on the private sector to improve Indigenous participation in our economy. It called on businesses to do their part. This podcast is about responding to call number 92 and what you can do to make a difference. Reconciliation. Conversation. Action. Welcome to You and 92. Sponsored by Farm Credit Canada, Zastel, Morris Interactive, and K+S Potash Canada.
It's time to create some traction. No more words, let's get to action. In the shimmering lights we start. Great ideas to make a spark. It's You and 92.
Here's your host, Julianne Riston.
Welcome back, listeners, first of all, to You and 92, a podcast about small and medium businesses answering the call to 92 with the TRC's call to action. We've had a number of guests leading up to now and heard a bunch of different messages about what to do with the call to action 92. We heard from my friend John Lage about get yourself educated. We heard from Nick Wright at EngComp about how he's looked at his company and engaging his staff. We've definitely learned a lot from Theo Clean and about what Indigenous business means to an Indigenous entrepreneur. And I think now is a good time to hear from Mr. Sean Howdle. He is the CEO of STC Industrial, which is a wholly owned Indigenous Economic Development Corporation. And he's been at this for some time and wanting to really understand a little bit more about your experience in this space. So welcome to the podcast, Sean.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
So we'll jump right in. You have been working with four Indigenous people communities for how long in your career?
Yeah, so my career, I guess, in total goes back about 26, 27 years now. And it's really when I moved back to Saskatchewan in 05. So about 18 years ago, came back to Saskatchewan, started working in Saskatchewan's north. So because of that, you know, you certainly want to engage with the communities in Saskatchewan's north. So that's where I first started engaging more so on the employment front, getting engaged with Chief and Council, visiting many communities. So that was sort of my first introduction. And then I had the opportunity to work with a non-Indigenous owned business here in Saskatchewan that was looking to explore opportunities to partner with First Nations communities. So I got to see that sort of side of the business of what does a joint venture partnership look like from the non-Indigenous side, or what does perhaps a new entity, an LP, look like? And then most recently, and I've really learned the most, absolutely, is for the last 6.5 years now, working directly with the Saskatoon Tribal Council in their industrial group, where, you know, coming into it, I might have thought I knew quite a bit, but boy, it certainly opened my eyes and I've learned a lot. And it's been a great ride this last 6.5 years or so.
That sounds like an extremely interesting career. So take me back to 18 years ago. What was it like as a non-Indigenous person heading in to speak with Indigenous community and leadership through business?
Yeah, you know, really, it's, you know, I say back that I was born and raised in rural Saskatchewan. They didn't really teach us anything in school. We didn't really learn anything, had no sort of groundwork or framework, didn't really even understand what Saskatchewan's North was or what that looked like. It was just an opportunity and a career that sort of led me in a certain direction. So you find out pretty quickly, you get to site, you start talking to individuals, you travel to the communities and you start meeting with Chief and Council and community members, and you really just have to sit back and listen. Yeah. That's the biggest thing, right? It's realize that you probably don't know anything. And, you know, it's that whole saying of two ears and one mouth. Spend a lot more time listening than speaking, and you're probably going to learn a lot. So that was the biggest thing, is just understanding even the space, the different cultures, the Dene Nations versus what it would be in the South with more of the Plains Cree Nations, the differences there, which I had no idea of the differences beforehand. The fact that there's, you know, 74 First Nations in Saskatchewan, I never would have known that before. So it was really just opening the eyes and understanding who is everyone? Who are these nations that are part of our greater community here in Saskatchewan? And then what can we do to help understand how we can work together, you know, so for that sort of collective good, if you will, going forward, knowing that we're executing these work, we need people to support that. There's opportunity to work together. Teach me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Where do you feel the communities were positioned at that time in terms of trying to be business ready or be ready with a labor force?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I would say, you know, pretty introductory. Like one of the things that I still remember this that really shocked me was, you know, traveling up to Stony Rapids and Black Lake and hearing that, you know, at the time when I first started traveling to the north, which was the mid 2000s, 2005, 2006, you know, a lot of the schools had only just recently had grades beyond grade 9. So if you wanted to go beyond grade 9, you needed to travel south from your northern community to a community such as Prince Albert or Saskatoon or somewhere else where you have no family support, you have no grounding whatsoever to get any education past grade 9 because the province simply just didn't have schools in place. So even that was a shock to me as somebody who realized, you know, we work largely within the trades and most of the trades have a requirement at that time for, of at least a grade 10 education, oftentimes a grade 12 education. So there's a barrier in place just geographically, because you don't even have the opportunity to attend school, let alone the effort and wanting to go forward. That's, you know, that's a significant barrier there. So the desire was there, absolutely. But the opportunity to get the training and to get the hands-on experience, the systems just were not in place.
Mm-hmm. And so did you have to creatively get workarounds to deal with that time? Was there anything there?
Yeah, creative is the way to say it, right? So I look back and, you know, Sask Polytech started to put together like a traveling trailer to do some hands-on in-community training. How can we better support that? And then, you know, bringing more of the sort of schooling avenue into community to lessen that travel. But it was still a challenge at the time. And, you know, fast forward to nowadays, that travel, that challenge still exists. Mm-hmm. To this date, as far as, you know, how do you come away from your home community for 2 months in order to take additional training? So that's still a problem here 18 years later, but there has been some improvements at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate you, you know, shining a light on whether or not things have changed over 18 years. And I think you're right. There's still a lot of work to be done in terms of providing that access so that Indigenous youth, Indigenous people have that opportunity not so far from home.
It's such a huge thing, right? So you know, Saskatoon Tribal Council, 7 member nations, pretty wide geographic spread here around the province. A big part of what we've been working on here within the last year and a half is increasing employment opportunities for our individuals that are living in our member nations, because there has to be an appreciation. Not everybody wants to move to the big city. Not everybody wants to live in Saskatoon. Not everybody wants to live in Regina. Same thing for the non-Indigenous population. There's a lot of people in Saskatchewan and throughout Canada that just want to live in their hometown. They want to live rural. That's where family is. Okay, well, where's the opportunity for employment there and how do we support that? So, you know, we've been talking with groups such as SIIT and Sask Polytech and some other organizations on how do we provide training in community and then job opportunities in community, or at least access that provides, you know, you look again, go back to the opportunities that are available in the north. Direct travel opportunities from those northern communities into the mine sites in the north. Well, we can do that in the south. You know, we don't currently as sort of a group of businesses, we don't do that, but why can't we? Why can't we set up a transportation corridor between Yellow Quill First Nation and a new potash mine that's being developed on the west side of the province? I think that's a great opportunity.
It is. That sounds like a wonderful opportunity. It is something that we need to definitely be thinking about. So it sounds like you're deeply embedded in the work of Indigenous economic participation and have been for some time. So I'm curious about, as a non-Indigenous person in this particular space, what is that like? What is it like to do this work and to show up the way that you do?
You know, I've struggled with it at times, to be honest, right? It's, you know, to participate in the space and to try to be an ally, the first thing you have to do is make space, right? That's one of the first things they learn. Don't make assumptions, open your ears, shut your mouth, listen and try to learn, right? And that can look many different ways, right? So you talk with elders, you talk with knowledge keepers, you get out there, you go to places like Wanuskewin and just learn the history. I'm a bit of a Wikipedia nerd, so I love going on and just reading articles and facts and just you know, looking up the history and the background, and you learn so many different things, or even book recommendations as well, or you get it on Audible and you listen and you just hear all these new things. Again, we never had the opportunity to learn. There's so much information out there that if you just dive yourself into it. So especially as a non-Indigenous individual, we talk a lot, certainly within the Indigenous business space, about that lived experience. So I don't have that same lived experience that the Indigenous population would have here in Saskatchewan. So what I need to do is make space and open my ears and listen to those that have, and then have an appreciation for what that looks like. You know, you try to take yourself out of what your background is and what your history might be and put yourself in somebody else's shoes, right? We hear that all the time. You know, think about putting yourself in somebody else's shoes and then looking at the world from a different worldview. I think collectively speaking, as a community, you know, Saskatchewan, Canada, collectively as a people, if we all did that a little bit more, I think we'd all be a little bit more open to everybody and things would be better. Community health-wise across the board. So yeah, as a non-Indigenous individual, it's education, right? It's learning, it's listening, being curious and having that deep appreciation that not everybody has the same story, not everybody has the same background, and be open to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I really appreciate that. I think what I'm learning, even, you know, I've been at this for 20 years also, but there isn't an understanding that there's a difference in worldview. And so I think contemporary society assumes and believes that we all share the same worldview, and we don't. And so taking that time to be curious and to really understand that there's value in another worldview. It's not about, you know, you have to think the way I do and then we're good. But the idea of, oh, I didn't think of it that way, and how can that add value to the things that I'm doing today, I think is super important. And I'm sure that you've experienced these types of situations where you have a pre-assumed idea of where you want to take something and then have to kind of reevaluate that after hearing from Indigenous leaders and Indigenous employees and friends. And, you know, so do you have any examples of that kind of a scenario playing out?
Yeah, you know, some of the things that come to mind right away is and I say to non-Indigenous individuals as well, like, never view any group as a monolith, right? And I think that oftentimes happens when non-Indigenous individuals first start entering into understanding Indigenous economic reconciliation and what that looks like, or just reconciliation in general. You start hearing sort of the collective of Indigenous, but there has to be an understanding that the diversity exists throughout the nations as diversity would exist throughout non-Indigenous relations. Like, you know, here in Saskatchewan, we have a large population of individuals that come from Ukrainian descent, but there's also a large that come from United Kingdom or English descent. Are the traditions within those communities the same? No, they're not. So why do we always, you know, as a community, make the assumptions that that's going to be the same thing within the Indigenous communities? I know a personal example I can think of, one of the non-Indigenous groups that I had worked with prior to joining the Tribal Council here, that was looking to have some partnerships and working with some First Nations communities, had offices across Western Canada. And I remember going and attending what they would call an Indigenous education engagement training situation in Calgary that was led by individuals from the Blood Tribe just south of Calgary. And listening to what those elders had to say and the instructors had to say, and as I'm sitting back, having all my prior knowledge being related to the Dene in northern Saskatchewan or Plains Cree in southern Saskatchewan, and I'm just shaking my head going, this doesn't add up at all. This doesn't make sense. And then there's this realization, well, yeah, of course it doesn't, because it's different individuals, it's different tribes. There's going to be different legacies and histories that come together and different cultural beliefs. And so you have to go, okay, no, that. So each time you engage with an individual or you engage with a nation, appreciate that that is an individual, not as an individual nation. Take time to learn and listen and not, again, make assumptions. Just get away from that idea of assumptions.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think, you know, if we can start thinking more like that, that we don't necessarily have it all figured out yet, and that there isn't one right way of thinking, it's like super important for us to move forward in a good way. So I'm curious about, there's a lot of folks out there that are in small and medium businesses that have all the best intentions, non-Indigenous folks that really want to do something. I'm thinking about your experience and what are some of the things that maybe you hear people say and you kind of go, oh, that's cute. You know, if I had some advice to give you, this is what I would say. So like, what would you say to folks that want to do something with all the right intentions? What are maybe some things to either do or avoid based on your experience?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there are so many things. And you prefaced it by talking about a small, medium enterprise that has all of the right intentions and all the good intentions. Sometimes I challenge the leaders of those enterprises and say, do you? Are you really committed all the way through, or are you just saying that you're committed? Because there are so many things that you can do that really have very little additional time or financial investment that can net significant returns. But oftentimes, unfortunately, I don't see those enterprises exploring those avenues. So I say, you know, if you go back to that saying that always suggests, you know, keep on doing something over and over again and expecting a different result, a definition of insanity. If you're looking to engage the indigenous population, like say, for example, you're trying to diversify your workforce and increase representation within your workforce. If you're just going to go and post on SaaS Jobs and post on Indeed and expect that you're going to get a different result, all of a sudden there's going to be a flood of new applicants and you're going to have this incredible success of onboarding all these new indigenous hires and they're going to work for your organization for 20 years and you're not going to change anything in how you're going about doing that. You're not going to have a different result. You need to look at changing how you're approaching that. So if you're looking for labor force diversification, well, where are those applicants? Where are they? Are you engaging with the communities? Are you going out and engaging with the nations and making sure that they know who you are and that you're going to be a safe, supportive employer to work with, that they're going to want to engage with you? Are you going to the Indigenous-led education institutes here throughout the province? You know, are you going to First Nations University? Are you going to SIIT? Are you working with them and getting on their job boards? Are you employing their co-op students and grad students? Are you getting engaged early on in supporting those programs? And again, making sure that the individuals know that you're an employer of choice that they want to go and work for. You know, I say over and over again, the Indigenous workforce is the workforce of the future. Population demographics are screaming it right in our face. I mean, if you want to be successful as a business, successful as a small, medium enterprise or a large enterprise in this province, you're going to get on board and you're going to make sure you're doing the right things within the Indigenous workforce space. And you're going to have a ton of success. I mean, it's you talk about, the successes that we've had engaging local individuals and those education groups as well. We've had a ton of success with it. We've seen, quadruple our numbers as far as our workforce participation in the last 3 or 4 years. And it's a great baseline to set us up for the future. And I think all other organizations can do things like that, but just be open to try something a little bit different. Push yourself a little bit further. Look at where those barriers are that are getting in the way and ask yourself, how can you remove that barrier? And I think you'll find oftentimes that it doesn't take a whole lot more time or a whole lot more effort. I'm very proud of the Ride to Work program that we do, where we provide, free transportation to and from the workplace, which immediately opened up the opportunity for a number of additional applicants to come forward and work for us. The cost impact to run that is so low. You know, you pay a little bit of cost for an individual to do the driving. There's a little bit of cost in operating the vehicle. The input there, you're spending 5 times that on your Christmas party that you're putting on every year. So I always challenge small, medium enterprises that if you really want to do something, you can. Challenge yourself, think outside the box, and be willing to step a little bit further than maybe you're used to stepping, and you're going to have a hell of a lot more success.
Yes, it's not just putting an open sign, welcome Indigenous
folks.
So
much more to it.
Yeah, it takes a little more effort than that. Yeah. I appreciate that. So I'm curious about your personal growth, having been in the space for 18 years. So do you have any lessons learned that you can share with folks that are maybe just stepping into this space?
Ooh, that's a good one. Lessons learned. Yeah. I mean, so because I talked a lot already about listening more than talking, for sure. Always being curious, constantly looking in for more information. Getting engaged in community organizations is huge. I think that's a big thing too. There's so much that you get back from that. The more that you get engaged with your community as a whole, you can see the direct impact of those efforts that are happening out there. Big fan of that as well. So some lessons learned. Yeah, be open, be curious, ask questions, listen. Listen more than speak. Really pay attention to the elders. They have so much that they can share with you, and they're more than willing to share with you. I've had the opportunity to, I've been studying Cree a little bit here for the last little while, and with the intention to be able to hold a conversation with some elders, which is great. But what I have learned through the process in even struggling with English and some broken Cree is when you do have the opportunity to speak with an elder, they're so happy to have that opportunity to speak with you too and share knowledge and information. So yeah, be curious, listen, your whole world will shift.
Nice. Yeah. I have had the experience of taking a small, tiny bit of Cree language, like I'm saying tiny. Yeah. But what I learned from that is the worldview of Indigenous people and the Indigenous community comes shining through in language. And so how words are connected, and it just all of a sudden things make sense in a different way. So I think that's really good advice. And to those of you who are interested in, and you know, doing the language apps and all the rest, if there's anything out there, and I don't know that there is, for Cree language, find that, because it really does give you a different perspective of worldview of how language kind of shapes and forms thinking, right? So I appreciate that very much. Mm-hmm. So we're getting close to time. I'm wondering if you had one piece of advice for a non-Indigenous business, what would it be to start their journey today?
Engage Indigenous knowledge keepers, engage Indigenous individuals that can come in, and they're going to help steer you, provide you that knowledge, provide you that information. Nobody knows more about the Indigenous space than an Indigenous individual. You know, myself as a non-Indigenous person, I've got so much more to learn, but I have had the opportunity in the last 18 years to learn a lot, but I have so much more to learn. Where did I have those learnings? Where did those learnings came from? They came from Indigenous people that I've been able to befriend over the years and had that opportunity to learn from. So never make the assumptions. I think back to myself again that when I was working within the non-Indigenous space, thinking that I had learned so much in all my time. You know, I've spent years engaging with First Nations communities. I've worked on joint venture agreements and limited partnership agreements. I've attended numerous different training sessions. I'm so knowledgeable now that this is just wonderful. And then I join the Saskatoon Tribal Council and start working directly for a group of First Nations and quickly realize I have no idea what I'm talking about. And I think,
humbling.
Yeah, it's very, very humbling. So, you know, if you think you know lots, there's so much more for you to learn. It's a never-ending process. Knowledge is a lifetime experience. Engage Indigenous individuals, engage elders, engage the communities, and ask the questions there and learn from those that have that lived experience.
That's wonderful advice. I will add, watching you do this work, it takes heart, and you certainly have one of the biggest ones in this space. So thank you for showing up the way that you do. And thank you for showing up for this chat today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah.
This has been You in 92 with your host, Julianne Riston, produced by the Greater Saskatoon Chamber of Commerce. Thank you to our sponsors, Farm Credit Canada, SaskTel, Morris Interactive, and K+S Potash Canada. Visit youand92.ca for more resources and information, including the Chamber's step-by-step reconciliation roadmap for small business and past editions of this podcast. Connect with the Saskatoon Chamber anytime at saskatoonchamber.com or through social media using the handle @thechamberyxe.
It's time to create some traction. No more words, let's get to action. In the shimmering lights we start, great ideas to make a spark. It's you and 92.
Theme song by Lancelot Knight. Produced at Sound Lounge by T-Bone.